Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the longest yard of free speech. And it's the longest yard. It's Burt Reynolds' longest yard. It's not Adam Sandler's longest yard, but it's still pretty long. And so go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed fundage. Jeremy, how do they send badly needed fundage?
You can mail your check or money order payable to RBN. Mail it to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. You can call in your debit or credit card number to Julie, and you can also donate on PayPal. Keep free speech alive for your children and grandchildren.
Yeah, and I have to say that I actually did not see Burt Reynolds' Longest Yard, and I usually don't see movies. I saw Adam Sandler's Longest Yard and wore a subversive Jewish degenerate. He pulled off a surprisingly believable quarterback. I was actually very surprised. But he's not the only quarterback in the news, is he?
No.
Did you see the movie?
I saw Adam Sandler's movie, not Burt Reynolds.
Sure.
Yeah, it was interesting, to say the least. But yeah, one of our American quarterbacks, let's see if I can pull this up.
How many American quarterbacks are there? I mean, I can think of one.
There are many.
Well, I mean,
but,
there's Tim Tebow, but he doesn't play anymore.
Right. But Tom Brady is arguably one of the most famous because of his age. I mean, he's like 45.
Yeah, 45.
And he's agreed to go back into football, which is phenomenal for his age.
Did he win the Super Bowl last year or this year?
It's possible.
I don't know. I wasn't paying attention.
But, I mean, his wife, Giselle, left him. And the divorce is non-official yet, but it's all over the news that she left him. This is from page6.com. Tom Brady
is
sad.
Does he know where she is? Does he know where she is?
Yeah, I think she went to, like, some island.
Because I don't know. I'm just saying. That enormous Jew who's running for Senate in Pennsylvania, John Fetterman, he's got some Brazilian woman named Giselle hanging around him. So I don't know. I'm just saying.
Tom Brady's Giselle went to Costa Rica, and there was over a series of arguments.
Is Costa Rica next to Wilkes-Barre?
I'm not. I don't think so.
Okay, Scranton. No. Okay. Just wondering, my geography is not what it should be.
It's some tropical island, but she went there after they had arguments over his decision to go back into the NFL. And, I mean, Giselle, she's a world-famous model. Apparently, she earns more money than him, which is a problem. That's a problem if you want to keep a female, you know, subject to you. You're not going to be able to do that if she earns more money than you. So these sports stars and rap stars and rock stars that date models, I mean, that's not a good way to go. You know, you look at people that have been burnt by women that are very powerful. I mean, Brad Pitt, Johnny Depp. Hey, Vladimir Putin are inarguably the most powerful man in the world. Lost his wife, right?
Yeah, now, of course, like, in some of these cases, like this Giselle, she makes more money than even Tom Brady, and it was a big deal when they got married. But in other cases, I mean, Vladimir Putin's wife wasn't a significant person when they got married. And, of course, you never saw her. I don't even know what she looks like.
But if even an alpha male...
Right? I know what Raisa Gorbachev looked like. You used to see her. And she was actually pretty attractive for her age.
I guess the point is, if even alpha males like, you know, Vladimir Putin, if their women are going to run off, I mean, what chance do you stand as, you know, John Q. Public, making a medium income and with no power, basically. These females will destroy your lives if given the chance. And I think that's what Giselle is doing to Tom Brady here. She left his compound in Tampa, Florida for Costa Rica following a series of heated arguments over Brady's shock decision to reunite to the NFL. Says that she left him with the kids, though. He has a boy that's 14, I think a daughter that's 9, and a 15-year-old son.
From a different marriage.
Different marriage, yeah.
And when you do the math, the 14-year-old would have been born out of wedlock when Tom Brady, I guess, was still married to his first wife.
Right. So I don't even know how many of these are her kids, probably just the little girl.
I think two of them are. I think the 14-year-old and the 9-year-old or whatever, I think those two are her kids. And then the 15-year-old was the former wife's kid.
But, I mean, I guess I want to focus on, like, the power that the female has, you know, since the sexual revolution and Ronald Reagan's signing off on no-fault divorce in the 60s, Governor Reagan. Women and children have been given tremendous power over men. And I think that's one of the things that's led to our demise in current year. I mean, you hear this all the time. In the UK and in Canada, females, I think it even happened in Texas. Females wanting their sons to transition to be trannies. And, you know, the father protests and social services comes in and takes the children away from the father so that they can transition into tranneyism. So what's up with these women? What's up with these women trying to completely destroy the lives of men and their families? Do you have a comment on this?
I have a lot of thoughts on it. And maybe not well thought out. One thing is, I wonder, and this is a question, it's a legitimate question, how significant, the California law, legalizing no fault divorce, was that the first in the nation? Was it really a trendsetter, or was, you know, the movement going in that direction anyway? You know, I think maybe because I know there was a fascination deep dive into this, and James Alsop and them, they were looking at this. And I when I heard that, I thought they were kind of scapegoating Ronald Reagan, and not that I'm a Reagan fan, but, you know, there was already a lot of divorce, and you could get a divorce. But yeah. Typically, there had to be grounds for a divorce. So, yeah, maybe it was significant. Maybe the deep dive was right on target. I'm just not so sure. And it's not, something that you used to hear a few years ago when boomer bashing really came into the fashion a few years ago, is it was like boomers invented divorce, right? And, of course, nothing could be further from the truth. What happened was divorce. We always had divorce. Hey, you come this way. Come on. We always had divorce. It did in the 1960s start getting and into the 1970s. It got way more prevalent. And maybe that was it probably was no fault divorce, but it was part of a broader, social upheaval, and pinning it too much on Ronald Reagan. Not that I like Ronald Reagan, but pinning it too much on Ronald Reagan might not be fair. But at any rate, it was not boomers who started getting divorced. Boomers, you know, the earliest boomers were born in 1946, like Clinton and George W. Bush II and Trump. I mean, those are boomers. And it wasn't in 1966 or whatever, they weren't getting divorced. They weren't even married yet. The boomers, what we experienced was our own parents getting divorced. It was our parents who were getting divorced. We were growing up in, I'm not talking about myself personally, but I just know all of a sudden, around, junior high school or so, all of a sudden, all my friends, like, you know, their parents are getting divorced, and or half the kids in class, their parents are getting divorced. It just came on all of a sudden. And this has been it's been a huge problem. And in general, you know, I will take the man's side in general, because I think, that, you know, single motherhood has been put on a pedestal. It's been celebrated, and single motherhood is certainly a misfortune. You don't want to wish single motherhood on anybody, but yet, no, single mothers are heroes, and, you know, they're admired. That whole thing has been crazy. And before I drone on for too long, just regarding, Tom Brady and Giselle, even though these people have, like, you know, 8 or 9 figure salaries, they're super rich. At the end of the day, they're still humans. And even if they have, you know, thousands of times more money than we have, their life expectancies or life processes are pretty much the same. And, if, you know, if you are a 42-year-old woman like Giselle, and you've got kids that are halfway grown up, at some point, maybe you do want to just say, look, don't be gone half the year. You know, I'm just, because she's a woman, and I don't know her, and she's a model, and I in general don't like models, although Empress Melania gets a pass. In general, she wouldn't be my kind cup of tea. And in general, even though I don't care about sports ball, Tom Brady is like a hero to a lot of people, and he's a 45-year-old white man dominating a sport that's otherwise dominated by black Africans. And I'd like to see him continue his career. But, you know, I can understand a family where this would be an issue. It's like, you know, the kids are growing up, and, you know, you've got to concentrate more on being a father. Because being a father, honestly, at the end of the day, if Tom Brady is a normal person, hopefully when he's old and ready to kick the bucket, hopefully he can look back and say that, yeah, my greatest accomplishment was, you know, raising these kids. Not my greatest accomplishment is, you know, 6 Super Bowl rings or whatever it is.
I will agree that Brady should have focused more on his children. And I would disagree with him going back into the NFL, especially at 45. That's kind of crazy. But I don't want to take away from the treachery of these females and how she really should just, you know, have his back, no matter what he decides. But, you know, it is what it is. To your comments on boomers and divorce, I mean, divorce was pushed onto you guys. You know, you had the old women's liberation thing. It started early in the 1900s. The women voting, but you look at World War II, where the men were off fighting and the women had to go to factories, and they realized that they could work. Right. And then you had this whole push in the 50s and 60s culturally with, like, Mary Tyler Moore, right? She's single. She don't need no man. She don't need no kids. And, you know, she can be independent. And I think that, you know, that was pre-boomer. I mean, Mary Tyler Moore was not a boomer. And so that whole generation, you know, I think the whole divorce thing was pushed on you guys, and Reagan, you know, signing that into law. I mean, that just made it even easier. That coincided with the sexual revolution, right? Mm. And the civil rights movement. You had a whole lot of stuff going on in the 60s that led to the demise to where we're at now, like, officially. But it was brewing. It was brewing in America way before that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's your point, right?
Yeah, Reagan became governor of California in January 1967. And and I haven't looked into it, so I couldn't say whether or not the California no-fault divorce law was the first in the country. But it just seems to me that divorce was already kicking off, and the things that happened in the later 60s and 70s with the massive increase in the divorce rate, that was something that was going to happen. That was already baked into the cake by the time Reagan was inaugurated as governor of California. But anyway, I'm not here to show for Vegas.
You have that with the Immigration Act, the Hart-Celler Act. I mean, how many boomers actually voted in 1965?
None. None.
You know,
not a single one, because the voting age was 21 at the time. And in order to have vote in the election, the elections for that Congress took place in November 1964. It means you would have had to have been born in November 1943, which was, right. I mean, Joe Biden was born in, I guess, October 42. If you want to blame Joe Biden, you can blame Joe Biden. He was, you know, he's 22 years old when the election happened, but not Trump, not any boomer. No boomer had anything to do with that.
Well, they act like the whole sexual revolution was started by the boomers, but I mean, it really started with Elvis Presley and, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis, you know, and all of the rock stars in the 50s. I mean, that's where the sexual revolution started. That paved the way for the British invasion. I mean, Woodstock, you know, you just had a bunch of teenage boomers just, you know, going out and doing what they thought was cool. That was what was pushed on them. So, I mean, really the fault lies with the greatest generation, I would think, if you're going to blame a generation into letting these things happen. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, it's just kind of this slow progression. And most of the things that we're talking about would not have happened if it hadn't been Jewish power pushing for it. And that's really, you know, rather than... Honestly, rather than blaming this generation or that generation or even this gender or that gender, when you get down to it, most of these problems that we talk about on this show would not have happened had it not been for Jewish power. Now we might be complaining about other problems, and maybe we'd still have significant problems. You can have significant problems without Jews. That's for sure. But the problems we're having now, the big problems that we talk about a lot, these wars, you know, the immigration, the black crime, you'd have some black crime, but the glorification of black crime, the excuses for black crime, and the, you know, all this perversion stuff, none of this would be happening, or at least not anywhere near this scale, if it wasn't for Jewish power.
Well, yeah, you talk about the wars. I mean, boomers didn't start Vietnam, and they were pushed into it. They were pushed into a meat grinder, you know, in Southeast Asia. And who were the movers and shakers? I mean, LBJ, right? And, you know, during his administration, and Henry Kissinger were huge proponents of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, and Henry Kissinger, in the Nixon and Ford administrations, there is another person who I never talk about, but David Duke talked about him. So he was, his name was Rosto. What was it? Walter Rosto. I'm going to have to Google it, or look him up in Wikipedia, but Rosto, R-O-S-T-O-W. And he was the deputy national security advisor, which isn't always that prominent of a position. In the Trump administration, you had Dina Powell, who was some Egyptian woman who used to party at nightclubs with Ivanka, you know. So that wasn't – she did a lot of damage because she was the source of a lot of these leaks. But it's not necessarily an important position. But it's pretty widely written about it in the Kennedy and Johnson administrations. I think it was Walter Rosto.
Walter Whitman, yeah. Rosto.
Yeah, right. Walt Whitman. Yeah, come on. I mean, he's a Jew. Walt Whitman Rosto. That he and McGeorge Bundy. McGeorge Bundy was the national security advisor. But that they basically.
To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. With every move he makes, another chance he takes. The odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent.
giving you a number, adding, checking away your name. Beware of pretty faces that you find. A pretty face can hide an evil mind. Well, be careful what you say, or you will give yourself away. The odds are you won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man, they've given you a number. And taking away your name.
Walt Whitman, yeah, come on. I mean, he's a Jew. Walt Whitman Rostow, that he and, what was it, McGeorge Bundy? McGeorge Bundy was the national security advisor, but that they basically had equal status. They were kind of like co-advisors. And eventually, McGeorge Bundy left, and I think for a brief, a relatively short period of time, Rostow was alone, was the national security advisor. But apparently, and this is something I didn't really know, but Dr. Duke, he did kind of a lecture on this a few months ago, that Rostow, more than anyone else in the administration, was the architect of the Vietnam War,
yeah.
Which was news to me. Now, my feeling about the Vietnam War had always been that it was predominantly pushed by non-Jews, by Goyim, who had been freaked out by the communism that they had seen or that they knew had existed a few decades earlier. Because if we're talking about the 1960s, events of the 1920s and 1930s weren't that long ago. It would be like us talking about what's going on in the 80s and 90s. So for these people in the administration in the 1960s at the time of the Vietnam War, you know, to the extent that they know about the Holodomor or the Bolshevik Revolution, I have to say nothing about more recent events in China with, you know, Mao, that they were freaked out about communism. But the thing is, the what happened in the Soviet Union, you know, it was Jews. It was the Jewish aspect of communism that did it. And B, by the 1960s, the Soviet Union wasn't being run by Jews anymore. And so I always looked at the Vietnam War as anti-communist goyim running and slamming the barn door shut after the cows had wandered off. That's always been my impression of it.
Yeah.
I might have to examine that in light of the leading role of Walt Whitman Rostow.
Well, you had Rostow, you know, along with Kissinger, and then Walt Whitman's older brother Eugene Rostow, right? They sort of took this whole McCarthyism, anti-communism thing and played with it. They took it and ran with it to drum up right-wing support for the Vietnam War. I think, now let me kick this out to you. I think that's why the whole hippie movement was big and funded by the CIA, was to discredit any right-wingers in opposing the Vietnam War. Because to oppose the Vietnam War meant that you were a hippie and did LSD and you were for all these degenerate sexual revolution policies, right? I think that was a whole move to discredit anybody that would be opposed to war in Vietnam in the 60s and 70s. And that the CIA basically funded the hippie movement. I mean, what do you think about that?
I think there's something to that. Now, what funding the hippie movement would actually mean, I don't know.
Well, LSD.
Promoting. LSD. LSD, and that actually, the CIA had a lot to do with that. But yeah, there was some sort of involvement. And you know, one thing that's going on now, I can't remember where I saw it, but the drummer for the Monkees, what was his name? Mickey something.
The dude with the toboggan.
The drummer for the Monkees is trying to use the Freedom of Information Act to see what files the CIA, or maybe it was the FBI, had on the Monkees. They were keeping files on the Monkees, which is just kind of weird. But the thing is, because I remember these days, and my mother was involved in a organization called Women's Strike for Peace. And so I was going on anti-war demonstrations, but everybody around me, they were like middle-aged women, old women. You know, they were shouting, you know, the young kids might be shouting, hell no, we won't go. And they were shouting, hell no, we won't let them go. And so, like, I never, in real time, I really didn't think of the anti-Vietnam War movement as being all that hippie, because from my point of view, I was surrounded by middle-aged women.
My point is that you guys would have been like you probably belong to like a upstanding rural family or suburban family, and you guys would have been lumped right in with the whole like Jerry Garcia, you know, Black Sabbath, whatever anti-war movement that did a lot of drugs and had a lot of degeneracy. They wanted to lump you guys in with that to discredit your movement.
Well, so there you go, because you had a lot of serious people who were against the war, and the demonstrations that I remember, and some of them were very big, were very orderly. They would have peace marshals just to make sure that nobody was jaywalking, you know. So they were peaceful and orderly. But just as is the case today with the feds wanting to drum up whatever they can in order to discredit the MAGA people.
Yeah.
It makes sense that, the hippies were exploited to make the anti-war movement in general look degenerate.
That's very relevant. I mean, you got feds and the Proud Boys and the Three Percenters. And, you know, didn't it make the election protest? I mean, it made it look like they tried to make it look like, you know, some sort of terrorist uprising. I mean, their playbook is the same for the last 60 years, you know? We'll be right back. election protest. I mean, it made it look like a, they tried to make it look like, you know, some sort of terrorist uprising. I mean, their playbook is the same for the last 60 years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's really not that different.
Yeah. And the Biden is trying to run with it. His speech in Philadelphia last week, which we didn't get into. It happened after our shows last week. I don't know if there's anything you want to talk about with the Biden.
The Biden speech?
Yeah, I did cover it on my show. I don't know if you heard. I was able to get a transcript and also make use of the simultaneous translation for the deaf.
Well, I mean, everybody's I heard that. That was funny. I mean, everybody's talking about the Biden and his speech. I mean, he didn't do that speech. Like, he's just there. He don't even know where he went to the toilet last, quite honestly, I don't think.
Do we have any idea who's writing his speeches?
No, I don't. I mean, Victoria Nuland? That's my bet. That's my guess.
I don't think she's a speechwriter.
I don't know. I'm joking, but, like, it's not him. I mean, he's just this geriatric that's being abused. You know, it's whoever's behind the scenes is writing this stuff, and they just push him out there to try to, you know, hopefully with enough medication, you know, allow him to articulate it. But I guess I want to get back, if we have time, you know, to this whole advance against the patriarchy. You know, we started with Tom Brady. And so, I mean, you know, what's Tom Brady to do? Is he going to start dating women under 25 like Leonardo DiCaprio?
Is that what Leo's doing? How old is he, by the way?
Leo is about my age. I mean, he's a year older. He's 47. But apparently he dates females under 25 and then breaks up with them. I wanted to bring this article up from The Guardian, and this total, like, tramp wrote it. Ara Mahadawi, I don't even know. She doesn't look Indian, but she's got an Indian name.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. What I'm bringing up is this whole attack on males and male patriarchy and, you know, people that do have power and money, you know, that choose to date younger women and how that's demonized, right? But yet they're not going to go to homosexuals and demonize like a 50-year-old homosexual for having a 20-year-old twink. You know, they're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. They're going to focus on heterosexuals like DiCaprio and Clint Eastwood and all of the alpha males. It's just attack on male patriarchy. So, as a matter of fact, this Guardian article, it's under this title, The Weak in Patriarchy. Leonardo DiCaprio, why don't you date someone your own age? And this is by Ara Mahadawi. So check this out. Here's the first paragraph. 25. All right. So the headline to this paragraph is Leonardo DiCaprio turning into a creepy old man? Well, so, first of all, I take offense to that because I'm 46 and I'm not a creepy old man, but whatever. So she writes.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey. Okay. If I can, there's a song called Creepy Old Man. It's from a musical, the musical Beetlejuice. I don't know if you ever heard it, but it's kind of funny.
I don't think so.
Marrying my own creepy old guy.
I'm a creepy old guy.
My creepy old guy, my creepy old guy. I'm so happy I could cry. Girls may seem disgusted, but we're actually just shy.
I mean, before, you know, 50 years ago, like for thousands of years of human history, men have taken wives, you know, 20, 30, and 40 years younger than them. When either they were widowed or they just took on a second wife or whatever and, you know, turned out children. And that's not been a big thing until lately. So this article is focused on this. This is going to bring up a lot of interesting topics about age of consent and, you know, what's an adult. All right. So this female writes, 25 is a milestone year. It's when the development and maturation of your prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain responsible for impulse control and decision making, is finally complete, right, at age 25. At 25, you have reached maturity and have a fully formed brain. You also have no chance of dating Leonardo DiCaprio. As has been frequently observed, the 47-year-old actor appears to be incapable of relationships with anyone over the age of 25. So the article just goes on and on to throw this guy under the bus. I'm not a DiCaprio fan. I don't care what his politics are. It's whatever. I'm focusing on, you know, their destruction of the male patriarchy for wanting to date a younger woman. So let's look at the argument. Her whole argument here is that you don't reach maturity until 25. Okay, well, let's go with that. How about you're not allowed to join the military until 25? You know, since you're not allowed to, you know, figure out if you can date a person twice your age, you're not allowed to join the military at 20 till 25. How about you're not allowed to enter into any legal contract until 25, since your whatever frontal cortex is not developed yet, okay? How about you're not allowed to drink or smoke cigarettes until 25? Or even drive a car? They're letting 16-year-olds get a license to drive a 6,000-pound vehicle 70 miles per hour down the road and make split-second decisions, but you're not allowed to date someone.
And a lot of them die in the process.
So let's just be consistent and raise the age of consent and the age of legal contracts and military service to 25. Wouldn't that be consistent? I'm asking you.
Well, that would be consistent. It would be consistent. Okay. Now, my thoughts on this type of thing, you know, a man of my age, we, you know, it's always a struggle to maintain our classiness and our dignity. And I struggle with it. I do my best.
Yes.
My thoughts regarding this, I do, uncharacteristically for me, I do kind of separate what's appropriate for, say, the super rich, the aristocracy, and for the normal person, for the regular person. And so for a super rich person who's like 70 years old to get a trophy wife, whatever, there are not that many of them, and I'm just not, you know, I'm not going to get involved in that. And of course, you know, the point of a younger, if you're an older man, middle-aged or older man, the point of having a young wife as opposed to someone your age is procreation. Because even women in their late 30s have trouble, especially with a first pregnancy. So if you're looking for procreation, you're necessarily looking for a younger woman. So my thoughts regarding the plebs, the regular people like myself, is that I do think it's important for especially the father of a son to be physically vigorous when the son is going through adolescence. And so sometimes I hear about people like my age or older than me who are talking as if they want to start a family. And I'm like, dude, you know, you're going to be 75. You're going to be 80 when your kid is in adolescence. You're not going to, that's not really fair. It's not fair to the kid. Now, for somebody your age, there's no reason why you couldn't be vigorous in your early 60s. I mean, for people who are, say, my age or older, procreation, really, at this age, there's problems with the procreation because, you know, your own life expectancy and your vigor expectancy, it just isn't there. And it's not really fair to the young men to be taking fertile women out of the possible mate pool. So my advice to basically normal people who are my age or older is, if you need to get married or remarried or whatever, don't go for a young 20-year-old. go for somebody more your own age. That's my own feeling on it.
Well, you made a really strong case there of older men taking, you know, because they have money, taking younger women out of the game for those of us that could still have children. That's a good case. And let me just dump on Leonardo DiCaprio for a moment, since I'm not white knighting for him, even though it sounded like it. I'm just sticking up for men in general who want younger women. Leonardo has no children. And so this person with money who could afford children, who's been an actor since he was literally like 12 or 13. He was on that one show with that one guy. I'll tell you his name in a minute, but so, I mean, what's this guy's game? I mean, so he doesn't have children. So on the one hand, maybe he's smart and he's never let a woman like sink her jaws into his life and like steal everything from him. And he's just dating girls just for LOLs. And then he moves on when they get too old. So maybe he's figured out the game in his mind. But I mean, for this guy to not have children, you know, by this point with money, there's really no excuse for that. So obviously he's just in it for the sex.
Yeah. And I have a friend or somebody I've known for a long time. And, he's somehow learned, he's not particularly good looking, but he somehow has a way with the ladies, and he's had a whole string of girlfriends. And basically, you know, I look at him and he's in his 60s, and he's just taken a lot of women out of the mating game until they're too old. And he hasn't really been very good for society.
But then you take like someone like Chef Ramsay, who I really admire. Chef Ramsay, I mean, he's an alpha male. He's a cook. He seems very successful. He's about 10 years older than me. So he's like 56. And he not only has a young wife, but he has many children, some of whom are in their 20s. I think Jack is in his 20s. But he has a son named Oscar that's like 5 or 6 years old. So, I mean, this guy, you know, I mean, he's produced children. He's taken advantage of his, you know, his wealth and his fame, and he's produced like, you know, a lot of alpha, like white children. So I would admire this guy more than Leonardo, I guess. You know, in that if you're going to take a wife that's younger than you, I'm agreeing with you. It should be for the purpose of procreation. You know, because he can still be pretty vital in 10 years. I mean, 66. I mean, you look at Mel Gibson at 66. I mean, this dude is jacked. I mean, he's got young girls. He has plenty of children. He's based. When you get him drunk, I mean, you really find out the truth, you know, about what's going on. To learn who rules over you, just buy Mel Gibson a drink.
Yeah. Yep. That's right.
So, I mean, I guess I should be a little more nuanced. We got way off on a tangent there, but I want to push back on this whole, you know, feminist thing where they criticize older men for having younger girls as wives. But nothing is said about homos who get twinks that are 40 years younger than them in some case. I mean, I've never heard any articles written on that. And, you know, not only is it a perversion, you know, homosexuality, but I mean, that's truly predatorism, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fairly common in the community. The average age differential between partners, I haven't seen any data on it, but I would assume that amongst the gays, the average age differential is significantly larger than it is with heterosexual couples.
Yeah, and yeah, nothing is said about it. So yeah. I guess we got maybe just a few minutes left. I wanted to bring up something on climate change. If you have, what else do you have before we move on?
No, let's go to the climate change.
From metro.uk, vegan activists block access to milk at supermarkets in 4 cities. I don't even know how I got this article up, but demonstrators calling for a transition to completely go to plant-based food production say that the government is turning a blind eye to climate ecological and moral crises. So my question to you, you are someone who acknowledges man-made climate change. You don't advocate for the measures that the system is taking, but you acknowledge it. How important is it to give up meat? I mean, what's your whole take on meat? And do these people have a point? Like, is it really that detrimental to climate, or is it more industrial stuff?
Well, I mean, if regarding the climate, because these people weren't protesting meat, they were protesting milk. And what milk is, milk's very, very different. If you're talking about milk as opposed to meat, it's a completely different animal. So you've got cows who are basically taking grass, which is undigestible to humans, and turning it into something that is digestible. But
their whole point is get away from animal, like get away from like getting your sustenance from animals, period, whether it be meat or milk. I think it's the vegan thing.
So yeah, now if you're talking about being mean to animals, you know, maybe industrial cow farms or might be mean. Non-industrial cow farms, that's if you're a cow, that's what you want to be doing. But the bottom line is that right now, the world's environment is very largely geared towards producing food for humans. And, you know, we're pretty close to pedal to the metal. And if what you're saying is we've got to reduce our food consumption, or we've got to switch our food consumption in order to free up more consumption for people that aren't born but are going to be born, for a growing population, that we've got to change our diets in order to make way for a growing population, or so that Africans can have more food or whatever. Yeah, I mean, as far as...
Only you can make all this world seem right. Only you can make the darkness bright. Only you and you. Magic that you do, you're my.
people that aren't born but are going to be born for a growing population, that we've got to change our diets in order to make way for a growing population, or so that Africans can have more food or whatever. Yeah, I mean, as far as the global environment is concerned, you're on a fool's errand. That's the way I see it. But, you know, I came across, and I haven't independently verified this, but I saw a professor. And he, and I haven't verified it, but it's probably true. He said that if you look at the biomass, right, the weight of vertebrate on land, okay, so all the birds, all the reptiles, all the mammals that live on land, about two-thirds of that biomass, two-thirds of the weight of land vertebrates is going to be in livestock. It's going to be in cattle and pigs and sheep and all these animals. And like, most death is in humans themselves. And only about 3% are your elephants and, kangaroos and wombats. The vast bulk of the, now this isn't counting insects because termites and ants actually, they make up an awful lot of biomass, but in terms of critters that we're used to seeing, furry, cuddly critters and flying birds and everything, that if you took the weight of all of them, that humans and their livestock are something like, 97%, which I haven't independently verified. But if you look around you live out in the country, but if I look around into my daily life, that's all I see is humans and our own domestic animals. I see some chipmunks and I see a few deer, but not compared to humans. So I'm just throwing that out there. We're almost out of time.
But we are. We got a few minutes.
Yeah.
A couple of minutes, I guess. I guess the processing plants for meat is what they're really targeting. I mean, if we could go back to where we were, like, say, before the 20th century, where the majority of humans lived, in a rural area and farms, and they did eat less meat. They ate way less meat, more eggs than anything. And they might kill a chicken like maybe twice a month and, butcher a hog every couple of months. That's probably healthier and even more sustainable than what we're doing now with these processing plants.
Mm.
Even though I don't advocate getting rid of processing plants.
Yeah.
I
guess my bottom line is that with the population that we have, if you're going to have this population, you're going to have a massive impact on the environment. And there's no real acceptable way to reduce the population fast anytime soon. So, I mean, we've just got to accept that there's going to be a lot of environmental damage. It's going to happen, a lot of environmental damage. And, and hopefully that in the long run, which is longer than our life expectancies, in the long run, civilization will find a way to make itself sustainable, reduce its population, without war and chaos. But it's, we're not going to be able to see it in our lifetimes. That's my attitude. I want to thank you for joining me, Jeremy.
Thank you, Patrick. Stay classy, my friend.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Geographic Radio.